We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So let's transition into the questions, right? So we got a lot of good questions today. Let's dive into that. Want to start off with this was hilarious. So Brandon Plesner just randomly in the middle of our show says, I thought it was Tuesday and Thursday. And I'm like, what the heck are you talking about? Then he follows up and he says, that's how locked in I am to IB. Trying to text my girlfriend and accidentally put it in the chat. Well, that's how locked in Brandon is to the IB show. So that was,
I thought it was Tuesday or Thursday. I was like, what is he talking about?
Yeah, that was a great one. I do want to thank Mark. He said the fly killing speed has to be a super chat. I appreciate that very much. You know, you don't mess with me during the show because then it's just, you got to go, right? I mean, it's just time to go. You're right.
Look in your eyes, by the way, when like you were eyeballing that fly, I was like, oh, something bad's about to happen.
Oh, yeah. He had to do it, you know. It's like, you know, I hate to do it just as bad as you hate to see it done, you know, but it's got to do it. You leave me no choice. Oscar Bravo Golf Yankee November with a super chat. Thank you for that. How much of an increase in arm strength and zip is reasonable to expect as CJ Carr develops? Also, just got my hat today. Thanks, gentlemen. You are welcome. I think we'll see a jump. I think CJ, Vince, you and I both saw him. He's a kid. I mean, he's a kid, right? And he's a tall, 6'2", very talented kid, but he's physically still a kid.
Skinny. I mean, he's older for a 24 kid. I mean,
I think he's right now. Yeah, just turned 17 in May. Yeah.
But he needs time. I mean, he just needs he's not ready to be a starting quarterback in college, right?
He is on the same age track that I was on because I had that May, June birthday. Where like you turn at the end of the year, so like he'll be 17 all of his junior, he'll be 18 all of his senior year, and then turn 19 as he's getting ready to enroll at Notre Dame, right? That's how I was because it's just that weird birthday. And I'll tell you, I went from my jump in size and arm strength from my sophomore year in high school at the same age to senior year was significant, and I don't have the arm that CJ Carr had. I had a pretty strong arm, I would say, my point is it'll jump. You'll see that. Will he look like John Elway by his senior year? No, but he's going to have a strong arm, and he can already power the ball down the field. I mean, he already is a more willing deep ball thrower than Dante Moore. I think part of that's the offense, you know, but he's throws the ball downfield a lot, shows good touch. At times, as we talked about the breakdown, he'll throw that deep ball and it'll be just slightly behind. That stuff will change as he gets stronger. So I definitely think we'll see more deep ball growth. I think his zip will improve, obviously, as he gets stronger, just natural growth. And then you kind of start talking about once he gets into a college strength program. So, I mean, arm strength is not an issue for CJ Carr. I mean, he has good arm strength now. It's going to be very good by the time he gets to college.
That's just natural growth and just natural.
Right.
He doesn't need to do anything special. He just needs to grow up.
And him and Dante Moore are very similar. Neither of them are going to have like the Nico the Malik Zaire, the bazooka for an arm, right? Like they just don't have that. But you don't necessarily need that. Brandon Wimbush had that, and he wasn't a great college quarterback. So I think they have plenty of arm talent, plenty of arm strength, and for CJ, it's going to get even stronger. It will for Dante, but we're just talking about CJ now as well. So, yes, I think that's going to end up being a strength, a significant strength of his when you consider that he also throws with really good timing for his age. Like, his timing for a sophomore is outstanding. His anticipation for a sophomore is outstanding. As the arm strength catches up to those traits, the accuracy, the ball placement, now that's why I say I don't have him as a five-star yet. I have him as a 4.5-star, top 50 guy. He's kind of in like that 35 to 40 range for me, probably overall as a player. He's my number two quarterback in that class so far, but easy 5-star upside. And I think we'll see that by his junior year. I really do. Just be from some of the things we saw just in the Irish invasion, there's been a little bit of a jump in arm strength from that standpoint.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/BlueWire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Brandon K asks, how likely is it that Foskey does not lead the team in sacks? Will one of the Adamiolas pull it off since Foskey might draw more attention? You want to take that one there, Vince?
Possible. I would never say anything's not possible. He is going to get more attention. He obviously leads the team in sacks after last year. I think that he's still going to get his. I don't see Jason leading the team in sacks just because of the position that he plays. I would be... If a defensive interior lineman is leading the team in sacks, I think that's a negative for Notre Dame. I just do. From the talent that Notre Dame has on the edge, I think that's a negative. So could Justin lead the team in sacks? Yeah, it's possible, depending on the amount of playing time that he gets, because I still think he's going to be a backup. I mean, I don't think he's going to start. So depending on his reps, how many opportunities is he going to get? I think Isaiah Foskey is going to get more opportunities than Justin is going to get. So just from that standpoint, I'm going to say that I still think Isaiah Foskey is going to lead the team in sacks. Would it shock me? No, but I think there would be extenuating circumstances that led to that being the case. Mm-hmm. If everybody's healthy the whole year, I still think it's Foskey.
How likely is it? It's unlikely. It would have to be somebody other than the Adamiolas. Yeah. I mean, it would have to be like Marist as a blitzing linebacker, as a third down pass rusher. It would have to be Riley Mills gets 9-10 sacks. It would have to be something like that. I think, like you mentioned, you made the case why it wouldn't be the Ademola. So that's that. I agree with you on that, Vince. Brandon K also asks, where would you use Jordan Bettejo? For me, unless he's a starter, I'm using him all over. I mean, I'm gonna get him near the line of scrimmage on third down. I'm gonna have him in like a rover role as a rotation guy in certain looks. I'm using him all over.
And we talked about that. But Ryan and I talked about that in our positional rankings and all of that. He's your Swiss Army knife. I think that's that's the value that he adds to this team, is he's your Swiss Army knife. Eventually he'll get himself into a starting role. I don't know where that's going to be. Is that going to be as an edge rusher? Is that going to be as a rover? Is it going to, I don't know the answer to that question, but I think that right now his benefit to this team is playing him everywhere.
Alan English. Some of these Shawshank Redemption people just can't get over the fact that I don't like that movie. In terms of national, Alan English, I'm just giving you a hard time. In terms of national perception, the Ademolas are going to break out like Andy Dufresne. I look for them to be a national storyline before the year is out. I think that's accurate, because if they're both playing well, it's a story because they're twins.
It's almost too easy of a story, to be honest with you. It's low hanging fruit that a lot of national media will grab onto. So I agree with that completely.
We have some people that agree with some of our assessments, Vince. John Murray says, good day, IB. I believe Ryan Barnes will work his way into a rotational or starting position at corner. Connor Nepper says, Riley Mills is my sleeper defensive player of the year. Let's go 99. And he also reminds everyone to hit the like button, IB Nation.
Absolutely.
Sean Kane asks, who do you guys see being more effective in a backup role this year at end, Alexander Ahrensberger or Nana? Can I say both? And here's what I mean by that, right? I'm not cheating and taking a lazy answer. I think it depends on what we're looking for. I think Alexander Ahrensberger is going to be the more disruptive rotation player. He'll have some sacks, he'll have some big plays. We've already seen that from him. I mean, he was the guy that forced Desmond Ridder to tuck the ball right before Isaiah Foskey stripped it from him, and he took off running. So I think that's obviously something we have to look at. I think when you look at Nana's more of a down one and down two, run defender, strong at the point of attack kind of guy. I think that's where I see him being the more effective player. So I think both is mine, Vince.
Yeah, I hope Nana steps up. I have less faith in Nana than I do in Ahrensberger right now, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything. That's just Nana has battled some injuries and things of that nature, and I hope that he steps up and is able to be that guy. I just, if I'm forced to rank them, I would say Alexander over Nana right now. But again, that's only because of what I've seen up to this point.
All right. Sean, Jimmy James says, can Love play the slot? Please say yes so I can dream we get him and Richard Young. The reality is that can he play the slot? I don't know. I don't think he's that kind of receiver. Maybe he is. I think Jay Lamar could be that guy. But I think the thing about Jeremiah Love is, read the article that's on the front page of Irish Breakdown today. He said to Ryan Roberts, I don't want to be considered a running back. I'm an all-around athlete. I can play running back. I can play receiver. I can play corner. We think he could also play safety. So getting him and Richard Young is not going to be a battle against each other. You're not taking one over the other. You take them both. So whether he can play slot or not, you're taking him. I mean, the fact that he wants to be recruited as an athlete helps your cause in that instance. Because if you get Richard Young, it's not like, well, Jeremiah, we don't have room for it. He's like, fine, whatever. I can play wherever. And that's what he wants to do. So that's a really interesting aspect to that recruitment. Travis Connor said, just joined, so sorry if it's been discussed. Are we still high on Prince Kali? He seemed like a hot name as the next Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah for a while, but that talk seems to have fizzled. That talk has only fizzled because he's not playing Rover anymore. But I think there's a lot of people still high on him. The difference is what did we say about Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah's first 2 years? Not a lot. He didn't play. Played one snap of special teams in his first 2 years of college football. Prince Kali's already done way more than Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah did his first 2 years. So I don't think he's been dismissed. I just think right now, Vince, there's older players that are ahead of him who are also really good, and that tends to happen when you're at a program like Notre Dame. So that would be my stance on that. Do you have anything to add to that conversation?
I talked about my love for Prince Kali. I think he's going to be a rotation player. I think he's going to be a really important piece of what they're doing defensively. And I think you're going to get a ton of play from the Will linebacker position, and that's where he's backing up right now. And so he's going to play, and he's going to make plays, and it's going to be fun to watch. whoever they put at will is going to be fun to watch. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm. Blaine Tiller asks, I think Maris is going to be great, but do you think some of the hype on him was because of the quality of the other linebackers last year versus this year? No.
Not at all.
No, because we talked about Maris before last year. He was a breakout player for us a year ago. I mean, this isn't the first time we talked about it. What we're saying now, we thought we were going to get last year before he got hurt. It's about Marist. And I think that's a very fair question, Vince. It's a very fair question. Number one, it's not relative to what was at the position in the previous time. It's what this player will produce. He would be in that even if let's just say J.D. Bertrand was an absolute monster last year. And Jack Kaiser was a great player last year. I'd still be saying the same thing about Maris because I would still slide JD over to Mike and I would have Maris as well. And he would break out from a injured guy who had 22 tackles year before to a really good player no matter what.
So players on the field. JD is one of the players right now. And he proved it last year, right? So, yeah, absolutely.
Jonathan Fish asks, is Vince the president of the Cam Hart fan club? If Vince is the president of the Cam Hart fan club and Ryan is the president of the Maris fan club, which current players fan club is Brian the president of? I'm going to let you guess that one, Vince. Who do you think I am the president of the fan club?
But he's not a player. Yeah,
current players.
I know. Yeah. I'm going to say the Jason Adamiola fan club.
Okay. I wouldn't say that I'm the president of his fan club. I just don't think he gets enough respect as a player.
You're a member of the fan club.
I don't know because I feel like being part of a fan club means like you kind of jump in on board without actual evidence of it being true yet.
Ooh, right. Okay. Like,
and I mean that in a respectful manner because you jumped on the Cam Hart thing before there was and I thought he was going to be a really good player too, but I just was like, well, let's see him play. And you're like, nope, don't need to see him play. He's going to be great. Right. And, you know, and Ryan's like that with Maris. So I think it comes down to, I mean, Jason's been a player, been a rotation guy since from the moment he stepped on campus in Notre Dame. And I just never felt he got the respect for what he's done. Right. So I wouldn't say him. I don't know who I would pick on that. I that's a really good one. I'd say, you know who I would say? Chris Tyree.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, because again, this also comes down to because I don't think he gets the respect that maybe he should. Yeah. I think Chris Tyree is going to be a game changer for Notre Dame. Again, maybe it doesn't equal 1,500 yards, and maybe he only gets 8 carries a game, but in those 8 carries a game, he's going to be really dynamic. So, and he's from Virginia, so he's got that going for him too. So that certainly helps. Yeah, certainly helps. Ryan said Avery just texted me, said Avery Davis. I don't think that's – no, I don't think that's – we almost forgot to talk about him the other day. So
I almost put him on my breakout player list.
Yeah.
But I'm just not sure how high of a ceiling he has. I just don't know the answer to that. I think he's going to end up being – if he's healthy all season, I think that he's going to be a very reliable, very go-to type of player this year at wide receiver. So I almost had him on my list, but I just don't know how high the ceiling is. You know what I mean? Because he's been a starter. Yeah. So does that mean he's going to be a star? I don't know about that, but I think he's going to be a very, very reliable starter. So.
I thought you were going to guess Drew Pine. That's who I thought you were going to guess.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to guess Drew Pine.
Man, you are a fan. So.
Anthony Oz, can Notre Dame's defense and the secondary contain Ohio State's receivers on opening day? Can they? Yes, of course they can. Will they?
We'll see.
Be seen.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think the thing is like the way that Ohio State ended the season and the way that Notre Dame ended the season in those two areas has people thinking that they're just going to throttle Notre Dame. I want to remind people that a lot of Ohio State's production was coming against backups and a converted running back. And I don't mean converted like Cam Hart was converted. I mean a guy that was rushing and carrying the ball in that game who had to play corner because they had so many injuries.
That's true.
So I think that – and again, I think neither game was necessarily truly indicative of what either team was, good and bad. Like, we've talked about how I'm not super high on Ohio State's defense. They're not as bad as they looked in that bowl game, though. You know what I mean? And so I think we sometimes put too much onto bowl games. Is Ohio State's receiving corps going to be really good? Yeah. We talked about that yesterday. We talked about how it's absurd to have – Ryan and I talked about how it's absurd to have Alabama's receiving corps coming back ranked ahead of Ohio State's receiving corps coming back. It's absolutely absurd. We would rank Ohio State's receiving corps probably as the best number one group coming into the country. But I also think that the problem with this discussion is a lot of people think that Notre Dame's secondary is just going to suck.
Right.
And I'll be like, you know, Notre Dame's played some pretty good receiving corps in recent years. You know what I mean? Like, the one they played against Alabama in 2020 didn't suck. And, you know, they had a hard time defending Devontae Smith, but they had some success against those other guys. And that was without a front seven like the one that they're going to have. And even now, I think you look at last year, like with North Carolina, they did well in some games. Against North Carolina, they didn't. Against some other guys, they did. So can they? Yes. Will they? We'll see. I think what it comes down to is the best way to slow down Ohio State's receivers is to dominate at the line of scrimmage.
Nailed it.
That's the way to slow them down. I mean, if the quarterback's rushed and getting the ball out, I mean, that's something that helped, I would say, Oregon. Is Ohio State put up their yards, but they didn't put up points because the ball was coming out quickly and because the pass rush, even though they didn't have to Kayvon Thibodeau, I think that's what helped them help Michigan especially. Is, again, Ohio State's going to get their yards. The key is keeping the points down. And you keep right. The points down by forcing the quarterback to throw more passes and getting the ball out quicker so you can rally to the ball so you're limiting the big plays. I think when Ohio State gets real dangerous is when they're ripping off big plays in the pass game. And that's when it's – because that's when the points come. If they're – I mean, they're going to get – like I said, they're going to get their yards. Just the nature of the offense is they're going to get their yards. But can you allow them to get their yards from a higher volume? Because what would you say were the three worst games Ohio State had last year? I would argue that it was Oregon, Michigan, and Nebraska.
Okay,
they scored 26 points against Nebraska. Nebraska had the ball in the fourth quarter with a chance to take a lead against Ohio State. And guess what else those three games have in common? Those are the three games they had the highest number of pass attempts. 54 against Oregon, 54 against Nebraska, 49 against Michigan, right? And the completion percentage was also lower in those games. I thought Ohio State struggled on offense early on, especially against Tulsa, completed 60% of his passes. So I think when you look at those outcomes, I think those are things you look at and say, if you can force him to speed up throws, get the ball out quicker, force his reads, that's when he'll make mistakes. As all quarterbacks do when you pressure them. I mean, that's true of every quarterback. If you get in their face, consistently pressure them, they're going to make mistakes.
And yeah, I think it's that. And then you have to try to contain their running back. That kid is a stud. You have
and that's what makes that offense truly dangerous. All the focus is on the receivers. The thing is, like, if it's just the receivers, that's I'm not worried about stopping that. It's that you focus too much on the receivers and Trayvon Henderson's going to go for a buck 80.
That kid is special. You've got able if you can contain their run game and you can get in the face of CJ Stroud, you're going to have some success. You know, I'm not predicting a victory. I'm not necessarily saying that, but if you're looking for a game plan, that's the game plan. You have to control their run game and you have to make quarterback Stroud feel uncomfortable. That's how you get to Ohio State's offense, period. So if you give me the option of who I'm shutting down, Henderson or Smith and Jigba, I'm going with Henderson. I am. I just feel like there's other ways that you can attack the pass game.
Agree. Let's get to a few more here, Vince. We have a super chat from ICURN with Irish Luck. I would say Brian is leading the Riley Mills fan club. I am subscribed to that club too. I think that's fair. I wouldn't say that would be the club I would project myself to be, but I think that's fair. I mean, as much as we've kind of talked about what we think it can be, I think that's fair. I think that's fair. I think there's a couple other guys you could probably talk about, like Xavier Watts. Surprised nobody said Xavier Watts. Yeah. Surprised about that one too. So we'll see.
Avatar looks nice.
Archer 452. If Notre Dame goes 11-1, will that be enough to get into the playoff? Last year 11-1 wasn't enough, but the schedule this year seems stronger. Only one ranked win last year. Last year's 11-1, they didn't deserve to get in the playoff.
I mean, week 11-1.
We laid out the path for them. I mean, we had this very show, Vince, at the end of the year, going into the championship game of, here's the path for Notre Dame to get in. And if Georgia beats Alabama in the SEC title game, Notre Dame's playoff team. I mean, it's just simple as that. But at the same time, we also talked about the fact that their resume was unimpressive. Yeah. We thought they were going to be a playoff team and wanted them in the playoff because we felt, you know, again, this was
– like the matchups. We like, you know,
they were playing hot. They were hot going into the year.
Probably.
And you take Bama out, and it's like, you know, okay, I think there's some matchups that could be favorable to Notre Dame in the postseason. Like, I would have loved a rematch against Cincinnati. I would have loved to have played Michigan last year. And Georgia is not the kind of team that's given Notre Dame problems. Like again, look what happened the last two times Notre Dame played Georgia, right? Oh, they're going to dominate Notre Dame in the line of scrimmage. Okay. Now, that was the one that I think Notre Dame does not beat Georgia last year. No chance, because Georgia would have destroyed Notre Dame's offensive line. My point is they wouldn't have hung a 40 spot on Notre Dame either. That was kind of my point there. But the thing, like you said, the end of the year, Archer, they had zero wins over teams ranked in the top 25. It's hard
to defend. I mean, you can't defend that from an on-paper resume standpoint.
You're hanging your hat on beating a 9-4 Wisconsin team that lost to Minnesota.
Won it with amazing defense at the end of the game.
Yeah, you're losing in the fourth quarter. Exactly. Exactly. You know, your second best win is a win over a 9-4 Purdue team. I mean, you know, like, come on. Purdue lost at home to Minnesota. They lost at home to Wisconsin. They got destroyed by Ohio State. Like, that's what you're hanging your playoff resume on. You don't deserve to be in the playoff.
It is what it is. And we said that. I mean, we said that going in. Right. We liked the matchups in the playoff, but they didn't deserve to be. So
this year, if Notre Dame's 11-1, they're going to have a win over Ohio State or Clemson, or potentially both, because there's a scenario where they beat both and lose to like a BYU or something like that, right? So it'll be much tougher. Plus, I think BYU is going to be a top 25 team this year. I think USC will be better. I think the schedule overall is going to be I think BC is going to be better than what they were last year if Phil stays healthy. I think North Carolina is going to be better than what people think this year. I think they're a sleeper team for me.
Harder than it was last year.
Well, on paper, it's not. That's the interesting thing. Because if you look on paper, their 12 opponents have a combined losing record. That's with 10-win Ohio State or 10-win Clemson, 10-win Ohio State, and 11-win Ohio State and 10-win BYU, because you have 4-8 USC, you have 2-10 UNLV, you have like 2-10 Navy. Well, we don't think USC is going to be 4-8 again. Right, exactly. Like we think BC is going to be better than 6-6 this year, because if you look at what they were when Phil played, they were 4-2. When he didn't play, they were 2-4. Right, and so, you know, I think those are some things I look at, Vince, and I say, you know, some of the teams that were not good last year are going to be. I think Stanford's going to be better. I don't think they're going to be good, but they're going to be better than what 3-9 last year.
Wise, it will help the overall record. Look at last year. You're right. It's an under 500 schedule.
It's much tougher at the top. That's the one thing I know for sure. It's a much tougher schedule at the top. The top four this year is much tougher than the top four last year.
Those are the wins that you need for a resume, right? I mean, those are the marquee, you know, because we talk about, okay, what was Notre Dame's best win last year? I don't know, Wisconsin, Purdue, But if they're 11-1 next year.
End of the year, we're begging for Wisconsin or Purdue to keep winning so they might get a team in the top 25 of the college football playoff rankings.
Futile attempt.
Right. And that was what, I mean, look, Archer, you're new to the channel. We talked about that before the season. Yeah. That's why we were so pissed at the way Brian Kelly coached the team, because it was a down year in college football. We knew Ohio State wasn't going to be as good as they were the year before, because they had lost a lot of guys. We knew that Alabama wasn't going to be as good as they were the year before. We knew we had predicted Clemson was going to be down. I didn't think they were going to go start the year 1-3, but we knew they were going to be down. Like, that was a year that was a perfect opportunity where Notre Dame's schedule was tough-ish, but we thought it was super, because they had like North Carolina as a top 10 team. Right. They had USC as a top 25 team, which we thought was patently absurd. You know, it was just, you look at the schedule and they thought Wisconsin was going to be a top 10 to 13 team. And we're like, no, they're not going to be that good. I thought it was going to be tougher than it was, but I didn't think it was going to be as tough as people made it out to be, because there was people predicting 8-4 and 7-5 last year, which is absurd. And it was just like it was a down year in college football. It was a lot like 2017. And that's why losing at home to freaking Cincinnati was so frustrating. And Brian Kelly's inability to make the right moves to get the team where he needs to get to was so frustrating, because last year was a year that was there for the taking. And that's what was so frustrating about the whole thing. And
Brian Kelly could have ridden off into the sunset.
Yeah. Yeah. What a title. Yeah. If he would have made, now again, that would have required a new O-line coach. I mean, weren't winning a title with the staff as it was constructed. They could have been in a playoff game and maybe won a playoff game, depending on who they were seeded against. If they would have been seeded against Georgia, they're losing. But let's just say they would have been able to climb up the number 3 or something. Okay. Then that's a matchup I'd have felt a whole lot better about. So that would have made it very interesting. But yeah, I look at it and it was a frustrating year. This year, I think there's going to be better teams. I think this is going to be a bounce back year. I was talking about the friend. I think the Big Ten is going to be better than it was last year. It's going to be deeper than it was last year. I think, you know, the Big 12 is going to be interesting. You know, I don't know if it's going to be as good at the top, but it's going to, there's some teams that are coming along. I think the Pac-12 is going to be interesting. I think the ACC is going to be better than it was last year. Because Clemson's going to be better. They're not going to be what they were, but they're going to be better. BC's going to be better. I think Carolina's going to have a bounce back. Pitt's not dominating the ACC this year. I can promise you that. The SEC is going to have a bounce back year. I think the SEC was down big time last year. I think the SEC is going to be better. So I think it's going to be a fun year. I really do. I really do. And moral of the story, to kind of answer your question, if Notre Dame goes 11-1 this year, yes, they're in. The only exception would be is if there's three undefeated teams and a 12-1 one law, a 12-1 conference champ. I think that might make it harder for Notre Dame. But yes, Notre Dame at 11-1 with the schedule they have now, assuming their loss isn't like last game of the year in a blowout, or let's say they beat Ohio State but then get blown out at home by Clemson or something like that. As long as it's not something strange, 11-1 gets Notre Dame in the playoff this year, in my opinion. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, I don't think it's even close, to be perfectly honest with you. So.
Yep.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And then Irish Chi-Town. Will CJ Carr start as a true freshman? Also, is there a chance that if we get Dante Moore, that Carr will be redshirted? Yeah, I mean, there's a chance. I think I'll address the second one first. If Notre Dame gets Dante Moore and CJ Carr, when the starting job opens, they're not going to redshirt CJ Carr immediately. They're going to let those guys battle for the job. And then if Dante Moore wins the job, then yes, CJ Carr would redshirt, which would be the perfect world scenario for me and what I think would be great for Notre Dame. But will he start as a true freshman? The only way CJ starts as a true freshman is if some things go really bad for Notre Dame the next few years. Because I don't think Tyler Buckner's a three-year player. I think Tyler Buckner's a four-year player. I could be wrong about that. He could be so good the next 2 years that he leaves early. I just don't see that, like, leaving after 2023, Vince. So I think he'll be back in 2024. So I don't think CJ would take a starting job. Right. And but if they're in a situation where Tyler is – that good and he leaves early, I think they would try to go get a grad transfer is what I think. And now, could CJ beat that guy out? Maybe. We'll see. I can't project the kid whose film I've only seen as a sophomore into really starting as a true freshman. I just can't.
A certain way on the current Notre Dame team as well for that to be even a possibility. So I there's just too many question marks to that.
Yeah. Again, could he end up being that good? Maybe. But yeah. I've only seen sophomore film. Like, it's way too early to kind of get to that point, in my opinion, Vince. I don't know if you agree with that. It's hard for me to even.
Too many ifs. Too many ifs. I don't like that stuff just because there's just too many questions. It's too far.
Yeah.
A lot of things are going to happen for me between now and then.
Yep. Let's get to a couple more here, Vince. Timeout Tom asks, now that the 2021 season is long past, tell us the real reason Kane Madden played. Well, I don't
because
know
they recruited him to come, and they probably told him you're going to play, and he played, and it is what it is.
I'm pretty confident they did not promise him anything. I think it just comes down to you had an incompetent coach who didn't know how to get younger players ready to go. It's as simple as that. And they just kept throwing him out there thinking that eventually they were going to get the guy they saw in film at Marshall. And they didn't have a coach that could get that out of him. I mean, there's no conspiracy. There's no such and such was in the doghouse. It wasn't that. It was just sheer incompetence, in my opinion, from a coaching standpoint. I mean, there's nothing more to it than that. I maybe there's something more to it, Tom. I don't know the answer to that. All I know is that they just looked at that kid and felt that he gave them the best chance at right guard. And the funny thing is if you'd talk to people, like, they would defend him and how well he played, which was absurd to me. And, wow. You know, it's like, you know, like Kelly would like, oh, so-and-so. Remember that time, Vince, you and I almost, Vince almost lost it. I thought Vince was going to go off. Where Kelly was talking about how well Kane Madden played, and you were like, he watched a completely different game than we watched because he was terrible.
What are you talking about, man? Anybody with any kind of a football IQ and has watched any kind of film, just how you can just bold-faced lie like that was mind-boggling to me. I don't care if he's engaged to your daughter. Like, you just can't lie like that. It just can't do it.
Mm-hmm. But he did that like just with like without even like breaking a sweat.
Like, I hope the people on the bayou enjoy that.
He was such a good liar that I think sometimes he could convince himself that his lie was the truth.
Yeah,
like
that's pathological. That's, by the
way. Yeah. Anyway, moving on. James Lawrence Zenzi, Pac-12 is soft, and they will have a high-powered offense. I really like their quarterback, but I don't think like Lincoln Riley. Hope he flames out there. I was talking about USC kind of breaking out.
Overall, I'm not over impressed with the Pac-12. So I think what he's saying is USC is going to have a good record, and I think they probably have a good record, and they'll probably be ranked when Notre Dame plays them, and then Notre Dame has to take care of business on the field.
I got to see it first.
I do, but
look. I was talking about this before the show. Oh, look at the quarterback they had and all the receivers. I'm like, in 2018, they had Michael Pittman, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Tyler Vaughns, and Velus Jones, and they had JT Daniels, a quarterback, and they went 5-7. Why? Because they sucked in the trenches on both sides of the ball, and they had no talent on defense. Their talent on defense is worse now than it was then, and their offensive line is still a hot mess. So there's this notion that they're just going to be 10-2. Like, so this USC team is going to be just as good as last year's Oklahoma team without any of the – I mean, Oklahoma had like four defensive players get drafted last year, including a couple D linemen that got drafted high. They had three D linemen get drafted last year, and their defense still sucked. And yet this same coaching staff is going to turn this USC defense with very few NFL players into something that's going to allow them to have the same record that Oklahoma had against not a great conference. I just don't see it. Now, will they have a better record than 4-8? Yeah. Do I think they could maybe go 8-4? Sure. Is it possible for them to be better 8-4? Of course, because the Pac-12 sucks. You know, but, I mean, I don't get it. I mean, we see it every year. I made a joke about this the other day, Vince, like when ESPN jumped USC up to number 4 in their rankings when they got Jordan Addison, and I'm like, this is the same outlet that had Texas A&M 5th last year. At Iowa State and North Carolina in the top 10 last year. And you and I laughed at all three of those at the time. Because it's like, y'all are on drugs. They had USC in the top 20 last year. There's just certain teams that they just overrank. They're going to keep predicting Texas A&M to be a top 5-6 team until they do it. And the funny thing is, they finally jumped off the Michigan bandwagon the year that Michigan went to the playoff, which I think is freaking hilarious. Because remember, every year they're putting Michigan, this is the year that Michigan goes to the playoff. And then last year, they finally got off the bandwagon because of how bad they were in the COVID year. And they went to the playoff. I freaking love it. That'll be what happens. And no, it won't be what happens because Jimbo's an incredibly overrated coach. So I just find that to be flipping hilarious. All right. D. Troll Hunter says, my lazy comp for Tobias is Justin Ross, but that is the impact I expect. I think he's more T. Higgins, to be honest with you. I don't think Tobias that – I mean, Justin Ross, before the injuries, Vince, was a burner. Mm-hmm. I mean, his freshman year numbers, I mean, it's like – I think it was 49 catches for 1,000 yards. Let me look it up. 46 catches for 1,000 yards. I think Tobias is more of like what T. was that year, 59 catches for 936 yards and 12 touchdowns. Like, I think that's more of what T. Higgins is to me. You know, I just – yeah, I just think he's more of that kind of guy to me. Now, T, the next year had looked more like what Justin did with 59 catches, 1167, and 13. He's a different kind of player than Justin Ross, but he's a big time talent in my opinion. There's no doubt. Here's an interesting one, Vince. I'll let you answer this one from Siggy 13. Clemson plays Syracuse before a bye week before Notre Dame. Notre Dame plays Syracuse before playing Clemson. How much does that help having a common opponent the game prior in terms of film comparisons and that? Just say this. In film, it doesn't matter. I think the second part is the one, Vince, that I want you to address on, and that is the comparison. Like, you know the talent of one and you know the talent of the other.
I think that's the that's the key, because you're going to be able to, okay, if they, this kid was able to do this against this kid, then our kid should be able to do this against that kid, et cetera, et cetera. Look, common opponents is very helpful. It's very helpful. And we mentioned that. Remember when we had a show a couple of weeks ago and we were talking about this and how Notre Dame will have obviously access to the Syracuse Clemson game as they're preparing for Syracuse, and it's going to be very difficult for them to watch that film without looking at Clemson thinking that's the bigger game. You know what I mean? Like that's where the film can hurt you. But having a common opponent, I think, is awesome. I actually like that no matter what sport you're playing, because you have something that you can actually compare things off of. And I think that's key. It's important. Syracuse is not going to be a great football team, but from a comparisons standpoint, I think it is very beneficial.
Yeah, because it's like, hey, we know what this guy does because we played him, and we know this guy's not good, and this guy gave them problems or something. Like that. I mean, there's things that you can look at like that. So, yes, that's a good way of going there, Vince. And then Carl Bremer, we have last couple comments and questions. Carl Bremer says, I think North Carolina is going to be a 9-3 or 10-2 team. There's nobody on their schedule they shouldn't beat outside of Notre Dame, but they love to lose a few games they shouldn't. Beat Wake Forest but lose to Georgia Tech. Yeah, that's kind of what they do. I don't know if they'll get to 10-2, but I think 8-4, 9-3 is certainly possible with that football team. If they didn't have to play Notre Dame non-conference, I would be right there with you. I know that they lost Sam Howell, and that was huge, and they lost a couple really good offensive linemen, but they got a lot of other guys coming back. The change on defensive coordinator, even though I'm not a huge Gene Chizik fan, he's a solid defensive coordinator. Solid is a huge upgrade over what they were. And so I think the talent's there. They've recruited well under Mac. I think that's going to play a role. And I think that they're just going to get slept on a little bit. I think they had way too much pressure on them last year, and I don't think their team was prepared to handle that.
Well, with that, I'm looking at North Carolina's schedule. I see 9 wins on here, and with the possibility of others, you know what I mean. I see 9 potential wins there, and they could lose one of those and maybe win another one. So I don't think 9 wins is out of the realm of possibility for North Carolina. And if that's the case, guess what? That helps Notre Dame,
right? Right. Here's an interesting comment that we had from ICRN. Kelly takes up for Madden, but throws Sam under the bus for being unable to snap in a hurricane. You got to understand the motivation behind one or the other. And throwing Sam Mustafer under the bus protected him from his poor decisions. Defending Kane Madden protected him from his poor decisions. That's the theme. Correct. That's the thing you have to focus on with him. It's always going to be about what did I do? What can I do to make sure that I'm not criticized for whatever decisions I make? Exactly. Right. And that's going to be the key to that. So Vince, that is going to do it for today's show. Everyone, I want to thank you all for joining us today. Appreciate y'all so much. Very good questions today. Very good engagement and interaction today. And before you leave, y'all, please hit that like button, hit the subscribe button, hit the notification bell, share this podcast. We will have a 6 o'clock show tonight, Vince. Sean Stiers is actually on the road driving to Omaha. I'm actually going to check now to make sure that he actually did record the show. Did you do that with him by chance, Vince?
I did not.
Okay, so I see Sean's Thursday show is on there. So we do have that. So we'll be here tonight at 6. We will kind of introduce the show and then play Sean's recorded show. So we will have that tonight at 6 o'clock.
Awesome.
Just to keep you guys kind of in that normal schedule, that normal deal that we're going to do with him. And then, of course, it's a Monday to Thursday show. And we'll be back tomorrow on Friday for
Friday Free-for-All Mailbag, baby.
Vince's favorite day of the week. There's no doubt about that. It's his favorite day of the week. And then, of course, Saturday, Sean and I have a Saturday show planned. It's going to be a lot of fun. We've already kind of picked out the topics. Some very interesting topics this week that we're looking forward to talking. And, of course, join the message board, boards.irishbreakdown.com. We've got tons of merch, Built Bars rocking and rolling. They've got some new flavors coming out. You're going to want to check that. Use the Irish Breakdown promo code to get 10% off your entire purchase. And just keep helping us out, right? The traffic on the articles has been slow. It's funny, Vince. People say, why don't you talk about the team more? So I do a running back preview yesterday. Nobody reads it. And it's like, this is why. Because like nobody reads that stuff in June and July. You know, I would love to do nothing but talk about the team nonstop, but, you know, I also got to make money. And right now, people don't click on that stuff.
not reading it. You know, they're not reading it.
That's the reality of it. But anyway, everybody, have a great rest of your day. Thanks, Vince, for joining me. Appreciate everybody's patience for why things took a little bit longer to get there. But we got rocking and rolling. So that's what matters. So we appreciate y'all. Have a great show. We will talk to you all again very, very soon on the Irish Breakdown Podcast.